Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pavitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Project Love podcast. We are here together and it's a very special episode today because we are celebrating Selena's book.
Yay! Yay!
We are all dressed up for the occasion.
Well, one of us is still wearing her slippers, but as dressed up as
dressed
I can
up from
be.
From the ankles up, you are. So first of all, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
You've written not only an incredible book, but also you've written a book in a global pandemic.
I know. Mind you, I did write it in the first lockdown, which felt very different to the billionth lockdown that I feel we're in now.
Iteration 500. Yeah. So the book is called Burnt Out, The Exhausted Person's Six-Step Guide to Thriving in a Fast-Paced World. It's so good.
Oh.
I absolutely loved it. One of the many things, and we'll talk all about what I loved about this book, because I've highlighted so much in the ebook. One of the many things that I loved about this book is there's such a radical message in the book. So, you know, it's reclaiming your energy, reclaiming your life, stepping into your power. But there's also such radical simplicity to it as well.
Fricky. This is music to my ears.
Yes. It's so practical, so simple. And I love that it's six steps.
Yeah.
I felt like every step, every chapter was like a coaching session with you, just taking you by the hand and guiding you step by step and loving you into recovery. That's what it felt like for me. It was like a love letter to burnt out people everywhere.
Oh my God, Vicky, I can't thank you enough. That is, you've literally said, I mean, all the words that I would hope for you to get from it is radical, you know, and I do have that. I really wanted, that was partly why I wanted to write the book, because it was kind of, I got fired up of feeling like, this isn't okay. And everyone's starting to just accept burnout and being exhausted as a normal part of everyday life. And I really suddenly just was like, No, I'm not accepting this. I'm not going to allow this to be normalized. This isn't okay. We are designed to thrive. If you're not thriving, if you're feeling exhausted, if you're burning out all the time, it's because something is wrong. When you burn out, I really believe it's your body going, right, stop. I'm pulling the plug. I'm literally taking, like, you know, the fuse has gone in your brain. You are exhausted. I brought you to your knees because we need to talk. This isn't all right. Like, you know, we need to change some things. And yet, as I started to look into it, I was like, this is so huge because so many people come at it from, you know, different people have different symptoms of burnout, but there's also so many different causes of burnout. Mm. So that getting it to feel that simplicity, I'm really chuffed that you've said that.
One of the things that you wrote was that you thought, because you loved your work, that you would be immune to burnout. And if anything, it made you worse. And I, as you know, and probably many of our listeners know, if they've heard some of our previous podcasts, when I've talked about my burnout that you really helped me with a year ago, that really resonated with me too. And I'd just love to hear you speak to that, because I think that is a bit of a misconception about burnout, that if you love your work, that maybe you wouldn't get to that place of total, you know, cynicism and, you know, all those things that can come, you know, the shadow side of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people kind of assume, I think sometimes when you're stuck in an office job, you're stuck in employment, you've got that difficult boss, got all that pressure. And, you know, that's often where we hear burnout coming from. There's a lot of talk about burnout happening within organizations. And so you can have the dream, like, you know, I'm going to go and work for myself. I'm going to go and do my own thing. And you have the courage and off you go and you do it. But what you don't realize is that you take with you so many of the toxic work habits that, you know, so prevalent in today's way of working. We can be the worst bosses to ourselves. Often we think, God, if I just got rid of my crappy boss, then everything would be fine. realizing that you are much worse than your crappy boss. And, you know, and suddenly if you're working for yourself and you're doing something that really matters to you, you've then got that added pressure. And, you know, now it's completely up to you to make money and all of these things added together. And I had really thought, so, and I don't talk about this so much in the book, I don't know if you even touch on it, but my father had a massive burnout when I was about 12. And it was, that's really probably why I do the work that I do today. I saw him, he was a complete workaholic. He worked really hard. He worked like put his suit on every day. It's like the traditional job. And so my brother and I saw him in that role and thought, we're not going to have that kind of career. We're going to do something different. We're going to do something we enjoy. My mum was like, just whatever you do, do something that you enjoy that makes you happy and doesn't have you working yourself into a massive burnout. So off we went and we both worked for ourselves and we do something that we love. And so I thought, there you go, I've done it. So I'm going to be fine. But actually that workaholic gene was strong in me. And you can, absolutely, it's, you know, this is the thing that you see people who are running their own business and doing something that they love, and even they are burning out. And this is what really got to me. I was just like, yoga teacher, when yoga teachers are burning out, you know you've got a problem. It's just like, and there was no one, people, you know, it's like people were just like across the board, people are burning out. And it does feel, in itself feels like a pandemic. And so, yeah, I realized that it was, it's, you know, it's more than just, sometimes it is that it's, your soul is slowly kind of suffocating in a job that brings you no joy. For sure, that can eventually lead to burnout because one of the things you do need to have is something that gives you purpose and a sense of fulfillment. But you can have the purpose and the fulfillment and still burn out.
Yes. So that's something that really came out for me when you were supporting me with this last year. I'm very clear on my purpose and I have work. I do work that really fulfills me. It literally fills me up with joy. And yet because I didn't realize my symptoms were burnout, I was so confused when I was feeling that symptom that you mentioned in the book of cynicism and kind of questioning, you know, am I doing the right work for me? Like questioning my purpose. And also because I'm such a giving person and I really, the archetypes, and I'd love to talk all about the four archetypes that you mentioned. And one of them was the overgiver, which I related to all of them, but particularly that one. And I thought, kind of a bit like what you were saying, like I'd be immune to that. Like I'm such a caring, giving person. And yet I was here feeling this cynicism for the work that I was doing and also feeling full of doubt. And it's so confusing that I found it to be really confusing when I was in it and the shame as well that I felt.
Wow. Yes. What, that's so interesting. The shame. What was the shame that you felt? Was it because you were doing something that you loved and something that made a difference? And also you're a coach and therefore you shouldn't be feeling burnt out and cynical and exhausted.
Yeah.
It's so interesting you say that because so many people, when they first burnout, and burnout can happen very slowly over a period of time. It's not just like you wake up on Tuesday morning, you're like, oh, what are all these symptoms? Like it slowly can creep up on you. And people often don't recognize for a long time that they are burnt out because it is things like, because it's not necessarily, you might not necessarily feel, well, you probably do feel physically exhausted. But again, like I say, so many people accept that. Exhausted and stress are this. Welcome to life. Like everyone's feeling it. Everyone's going on about how busy they are, how exhausted they are, how stressed they are. And we do wear it like a badge of honor, all those things. And I started to notice that people even use burnout as a badge of honor. Oh my God, I'm just so burnt out this weekend. I'm not coming out. I'm going to lie in a darkened room. Those are the mini burnouts. But yeah, the sort of longer term ones that can kind of build up. People don't necessarily recognize it as burnout. Because it can be symptoms like cynicism and suddenly questioning whether this is the right career for you at all. Suddenly no longer, questioning your own values, not feeling engaged in the work like you once did. And so sometimes people have come to me and they're questioning their whole career and I'm like, the career isn't the problem. It's the way you are, like, it's your inner shitty committee. That's actually the problem here. And so there's three sort of areas that I the kind of help people look at. So one is the inner shitty committee. How loud is that? If that's 24/7, that's the inner critic that we like to talk about a lot. If that's turned up really loud and it's 24/7 piling on the pressure, that alone can burn you out. Then there's knowing how to look after yourself and manage your energy. And that was the part of the book that totally changed my own life, because I realized afterwards, I had no idea how to manage my energy. And I didn't know that you could be increasing your energy and your capacity for energy and topping it up throughout the day. I just assumed that everyone would felt worn out at the end of the day because you'd used up all your energy. So I can get onto that in a moment. But the third thing to look at is obviously the things that are going on the outside. So is it that you've got a demanding boss that there's no way you're going to thrive in that situation? Is it that your career just is no longer the right career for you? Maybe it never was. Mm-hmm. Or is it that you love what you do, but you need to now change how you do it? So you see a lot of people going from employment to going freelance, starting their own thing, becoming consultants. So they're still at the heart of it. They're still doing the same thing, but they just need to repackage it and do it in a new way. And often that's to leave the very rigid structure of, you know, modern day traditional employment, particularly if people have kids. But also if people just want to have a bit more freedom and flexibility and don't want to be going into the office, or, you know, with more working from home, but don't want to be having to turn their laptop on at the same time every day and be on, switched on and available all day long. And, you know, someone else telling you what to do and when to do it. Like, after a good couple of decades of that, or even just a good couple of years of that in my case, people are just like, this is not what I want my life to be about. So there are so many different factors that can cause burnout. But yeah, those are the kind of three main areas that you need to start looking at.
Can we talk about the archetypes now?
Yes.
Yay. I love this so much. Tell us about the four burnout archetypes.
Yeah. So this was something that it just sort of evolved as I was really researching. And I did a lot of, I did a big survey asking people who had experienced burnout or were feeling burnt out, what their experience was or had been, to really start to get a feel for, like, what happens to people? Like, how can we start to tell that we're heading towards burnout? And I noticed, and I experienced mini burnouts for a good few years, about 7 years ago. So, you know, every sort of about two or three times a year, I'd just completely crash and burn and have a mini burnout. But so speaking to people who had mini burnouts, speaking to people who felt on the verge of burnout, people who had felt like they'd been living in a state of burnout for years, and also people who had big burnouts, to kind of start to get a picture of, like, what are the behaviors? And what I noticed was, it's as if you just go into overdrive and you go into, like, a hyper mode. And suddenly, like, so the overdoer, they just suddenly cannot stop doing. They're like in a doing frenzy, and there's not enough time in the day. And that to-do list, like, literally it wakes them up in the morning. And it's just like, there are things to do. And as you lie in bed at night, you're thinking of the to-do list and adding new stuff to it. And it's almost like it's, you're a slave to your to-do list, and there's always stuff. So you can't switch off. You can't stop. You can't rest. And that becomes the narrative. Yeah, I wish I had time to rest, but I can't. Have you seen all the things I've got to do? There's always a powerlessness as well that comes with burnout. I can talk about that afterwards. So that's the overdoer. Then you have the overthinker, the person who cannot switch off their brain. Now, the thing about these archetypes is that it's the shadow side of your sort of your super strengths and your gifts. So the overdoer, when they're in their full power, they're that capable person that just can get things done. They're just brilliant at, like, taking an idea, making stuff happen. They're great organizing. But when they slip into overdrive and the shitty committee is there and it's like, come on, there's a tight deadline, or there's just lots of, you know, plates being spun around, it's like they're jacked up now on adrenaline and caffeine, and they kind of go into overdrive. So the overthinker is, you know, when they're balanced, they're that person that's their brilliant problem solver. You know, brilliant at coming up with ideas, or brilliant at analyzing things, brilliant at figuring things out. When they go into overdrive, it's like their brain is going hyperspeed and they can't stop and they can't go to sleep at night. They can't switch off because they're thinking their problems everywhere and they need to solve them all, and it's all up to them to solve them. So then you get the overgiver who, you know, is naturally that compassionate, loving person who loves to be of service. When they slip into overdrive, they are just, they're overextending themselves. They're not taking enough care of themselves. They're not filling up their own cup. So that's the one where it's like, you can't pour from an empty cup. That's the overgiver. They are pouring from a cup that's empty. They're saying yes when they really need to say no. And then they start to feel resentful. So normally they're so compassionate and loving, and that's why it's awful for them, because they start not being able to recognize themselves, because you get the cynicism and the resentment. You're nodding your head, exactly, because you know this one. And so a lot of women, and you know, experience the overgiver, because not because we're the natural caregivers, but we do, you know, do tend to be, through nature or nurture, you know, really strong givers. So we can slip into overgiver mode. And then there's the overachiever. So the overachiever is, you know, in their sort of balanced, in their power, they're the visionary, they're the ones out in the world, you know, making things happen, and they're on a mission. But when they click into overdrive, they suddenly become like dogged determination, and you know, just like head down and just really driven. And there's no joy to it anymore. They're not being inspired. They're not being motivated by the mission they're on and the difference they want to make and their own vision. They're now being driven by their shitty committee, who's like, don't fuck this up. And not in a fun RuPaul way. Like in a horrible...
Without any sass.
Any sass or sequins. Yeah. So it's kind of a way of starting to recognize how we slip into this state of overdrive and how that can affect our behavior. So that once you start to recognize the sort of behaviors that come with that sort of slipping into overdrive, you can start to catch it sooner and be like, hold on a second. Am I now suddenly becoming completely obsessed with my to-do list and thinking that I can't possibly take a break because that's the most important thing? Okay, warning signs. I'm slipping into, you know, overdoer mode. I need to take a step back, take a time out. I need to have a word with my shitty committee. I need to calm my nervous system down. Mm. Who do I need to speak to get some help on this enormous to-do list? What can I move to next? You know, where can I sort of be rescheduling, moving some goalposts for deadlines and things, asking for help to sort of bring you out of that panic? And that's the other thing, is there's that panic and urgency, which is such a part of our work culture. This, you know, when before we were all hiding away indoors, every time I went into town and would go into like London Bridge, the energy of urgency that comes from this like energy of importance, I'm rushing to wherever I'm getting to. I was just like, the moment you're stepping into your day, you're getting whisked up into this energy of, you know, urgency. And that gets you into fight or flight mode. And when you're living in a permanent state of that, which really is cultivated in you know, particularly in places like London, that's, you know, that's, you're heading for burnout eventually. You can't, it's not a way to live.
And it's so normalized because everybody is doing it.
Yeah. It's celebrated. We've got, it's so tied up in, you know, one of the, what was magical to me was discovering that the ingredients you need to thrive are the exact same ingredients you need to be your most productive and to do your best work. And so actually so much of what we've been, you know, led to believe about productivity and how to be productive and how to do your best work and how to be that sort of champion in the office at work, or, you know, or the champion entrepreneur at home, like working all hours and in a almost frenzied state. When you're in that state, your IQ drops, you can't make as good choices, you're not as productive, you flap around a lot, you think you're being super productive and like, you know, because that urgent energy, that's what it looks like, right? To be this, you know, super success, hustle, hustle, hustle. That, as we know, you try hustling for too long, you will burn out. And that's one of the things that happens for entrepreneurs, is this idea of the hustle at the start. But that comes from a fear of scarcity, as well as a need to get things going to, you know, build up your business. But the thing is, it is very much, we're in a society where we are so obsessed with that yang energy of progress, productivity, faster, outward results. And it's doing, faster, faster, faster. and we are completely out of balance. We need that yin energy of, and now rest, and now be still. Not in a space of nothing, but when you rest, when you switch that brain off and you move it to the right side of the brain, you're doing, walking out in nature or doing something creative or having a shower, like washing the, like, you know, those moments, that's when we get our best ideas, because actually you haven't switched your brain off. You just moved it into the right side, and that's where you make connections. That's where the intuition, the creativity happens. So it's also, we don't value that yin, that feminine aspect. We're so out of balance. So for me, that's why burnout is such an obvious symptom of our times, because we're so out of whack and we're so obsessed with yang. And do you know what? So getting into the sort of yin and yang, and it was really weird. I had a yin yang sign on my laptop that my, as I was writing the book, that Sammy, my son, suddenly got, kept becoming obsessed with every day. We'd talk about yin yang.
Wow.
And it really became the underpinning of, for me, understanding why we are in this mess. Mm. And what I discovered was that yang energy is also things like excitement, positivity, enthusiasm, and all that energy. I was like, I am so yang. So, you know, and so a lot of the book is about, it is about readdressing that balance and getting us back into balance and getting us valuing, you know, rest and relaxation isn't just a nice to have, but it is, you start to realize that that's your power. That's how you step into your power, is by having a hot bath. Is not just a reward when you think you have the time.
Yeah.
Having a hot bath when you've had a full-on day is also going to have you fully charged up for whatever you've got to take on the following day. Mm-hmm. It's also going to make you more present to your family and your loved ones. So, it is radical.
Yeah, it is really radical. You started writing this book before the whole world went mad.
Yes.
Actually, maybe I won't say mad. You started writing this book before the world went a little bit loco, let's say. And it's coming out in spring season. It's now officially spring, well, here in the Northern Hemisphere. And lockdown is starting to be unlocked. Mm. And particularly when it comes out, it's the 15th of April that the paperback comes out.
Yeah.
So the book has sort of witnessed, you know, this huge, you know, transformation in our world, you know, the way we live, the way we work. How do you think that has impacted the message of the book?
Do you know, it's so funny. I don't mention the global pandemic at all in the book, because I thought when I was writing it in March 2020, that by April 2021, it would be long, long, long ago. Do you remember those couple of months and we had to stay indoors? No, it was a whole year and more. I think what's been really interesting is, having written the book, and I learned so much from writing the book, writing it genuinely changed my life. Like, I'm more energized, calmer, more grounded than I ever have been. And even in the moments where the global pandemic and all of the stuff that's been going on this year have got to me, I know I'm in control. I know how to manage my energy. I had no notion of that. Like, so, you know, the cure to burnout and the way to break free from burnout is many facets to it. But really a big part of it that you can take control of is learning how to manage your energy. And I think it's something that we really don't understand at all in our society, because I've been reading about self-care for a long time, but I'd never come across this before. And it's really influenced by Tim Schwartz and Jim Lohr, who wrote a book called The Power of Full Engagement. And they are the masters of energy management. They used to train tennis champions in America, and then they took it into the corporate space. And yeah, they just blew my mind. But in terms of the, you know, in the sort of backdrop of this global pandemic, what I noticed was how people were burning out was really in the emotional energy. So you burn out on the physical level, emotional, mental, and spiritual. And in the book, I particularly look at how to start reclaim your energy on physical, mental and emotional. And it's the emotional energy that has been most depleted during the global pandemic. And I think it's going to take some time to actually fill that back up. But that was why, you know, I was telling people and advising people who are feeling really affected, you know, the corona coaster that we talk about, like the up and downs of that. But one of the things to do is really feel your feelings. So things that deplete the emotional cup are, you know, strong emotions, strong and uncomfortable emotions of sadness, of anxiety, of grief, of frustration, of uncertainty, all of this stuff we've been experiencing during the global pandemic. When you feel those things and you suppress them, and that's why I kept saying to people, we mustn't normalize this. We mustn't say to ourselves, well, I'm one of the lucky ones. You know, I'm not on the front line, or I'm not in this situation or that situation. I'm one of the lucky ones. No, this is hard for everyone. And we need to feel our feelings, because acknowledging your feelings, that helps you to fill up your cup. Suppressing your feelings drains your emotional energy. Other things that help to fill up your cup are simple pleasures, like the stuff that we talk about, things that bring you joy, things that lift your spirits, which is why, you know, during lockdown, doing things like getting out in nature, you know, watching something that makes you laugh, making things, playing, you know, all the sort of things that lift your spirits is a really good way to fill up your cup. Connecting with people, you know, again, that's why I think during, you know, all these lockdowns, it's been depleted our emotional energy so much. That's why I think a lot of people are emotionally burnt out, because of the lack of connection. You know, that connection really helped. We, you know, the difference of, okay, Zoom is great. Thank God we've got that technology. But humans connect not just through verbal and sort of visual. There's an energy that happens when people are together that you connect on an energetic level, and we've been missing that. So yeah, I think what a lot of people have been experiencing is emotional burnout, and actually probably mental burnout as well. You know, all the worry, all the thinking, trying to figure stuff out, you know, oh, suddenly, you know, homeschooling, now I need to manage homeschooling and my full-time job and all the sort of, you know, the logistics around that, and you know, the goalposts being changed. And so, yeah, we're exhausted.
There's literally never been a better time for this book to come out.
And also I think as well with the, you know, obviously it's changed things. People are going to be working from home more, but as people do start returning to office spaces, I talk a lot, you know, there's a whole section in the book about designing your day, designing your working day. And I talk a lot about open plan offices are not necessarily the places for the best places for people to thrive. You know, the overstimulation, the noise, the interruptions, like people who work in open plan offices are apparently interrupted on average every 3 minutes. Wow. Then you add to that any, if you have notifications on your phone or notifications on your email, and you've got those pinging up, to do any kind of deep focused work, you need about 20 minutes to really get into it. So if you're interrupted, you need on average 20 minutes to get back into it. I was like, I've never liked open plan offices. When I go into open plan offices, I want to run. I want to get the hell out of there. I feel like eyes on you. That's another one. People can't fully relax, so they're in a state of high alert at all times. If you're an introvert and you need peace and quiet, and you get really affected by overstimulation, I mean, like, open plan office can be an absolute nightmare. But you need to have spaces that you can go to have, you know, uninterrupted time. And, you know, if your office doesn't provide that, you need to think about ways that you can get that. But yeah, it's a good time to be getting back into working in an office in a way that you can thrive. And this is the thing, you know, this is the big message in my book, is that we are designed to thrive. And yet for many of us, we're living in a world of work and a world full stop that isn't set up for us to thrive. But does that mean, therefore, we just got to resign ourselves? Well, therefore, I guess we'll be tired and exhausted and stressed out the whole time. No, we can thrive, but we need to take it into our own hands. And for some people, that does mean leaving the traditional
workplace because it just isn't going to work for them, whether it's because they're experiencing discrimination. I talk about racial microaggressions, and I talk about dealing with the patriarchy at work. When I was reading out the audiobook, I'd kind of forgotten, like, I hadn't read my content for a while, and I was reading it out. And I looked over to the sound engineer. I was like, wow, Sonny gets a bit, like, right on and radical. And he's just like, it's great. He's like, this stuff is needed. But, you know, and also for someone like me, it was never going to work having a boss, working a 9-to-5, having to work in an office. Those were not ingredients that brought me joy, and they drained me and they made me feel trapped. So I did have to leave. You know, the traditional world of work was never going to be a space for me. And I knew that really early on. But for some people, that is the solution. That doesn't mean you do have to leave employment. You can make it work, but you need to understand what ingredients you need to thrive so you can start having those conversations at work and saying, every Monday, every Friday, I'm going to work from a cafe down the road, or I'm actually going to start working from a co-working space, or I'm going to work from home more when I want to do my deep focused work. I could come in for the meetings and to do the stuff that is easy to do while there are distractions around. You know, there's easy stuff you can do that doesn't require a lot of focus or concentration. But the more we can understand how to manage our energy and what drains our energy and what also stresses us out when we're not even aware of it, like smartphones, then we are empowered to do something about it.
Yes. I feel like there's this RuPaul energy that's emerging again.
I've been watching a lot of RuPaul.
Hell yeah.
Can I get an amen?
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned in the book, and I'm going to actually read a little snippet aloud to you. So you say, even though right now you might say that, yeah, of course you want to thrive in life. Of course you want to feel energized, calm and grounded day after day. Trust me, you will resist it.
Yeah.
And I'd love for you to speak to that. Why do we resist what's good for us?
Do you know, it was so interesting. When I did the survey, I've never been so inundated by so many of my own friends answering that survey. I was like, as I thought, everyone is burnt out and exhausted. But one of the questions I asked was, what are the things that you know help you look after your well-being? And they would say things like exercise and meditation, getting out in nature, making sure I don't work on weekends, all these things. Which of these things are you doing right now? And invariably, the response was, well, to be honest, none of them. I know I should, but I'm not doing any of them. And I get it when we're burnt out, when we're exhausted, when we are overextended, overwrought, like overwhelmed, our self-care habits are the things to get dropped. I think this is, so there's various reasons for this. One of it is the deep-rooted narratives that we have around thriving, being happy, looking after ourselves. And if you have in your family or in, you know, in your ancestral line, experiences of war, famine, slavery, any trauma where you've really had, where they've had to really fight to survive and to live is to struggle. And, you know, you work hard, you sort of make sacrifices for your family. That narrative can carry through, and you can be living from that narrative without realizing it, that, you know, work is hard. If you want to be successful, you need to fight for it. You need to struggle. There's also what happens often, what I've often seen in my clients, and I've read about this also being a common occurrence, is that you can feel like you're betraying the people that came before you if you are happy and you have work that is easeful because they didn't. And then you feel bad about, well, if they didn't, who am I to have it easy? And so we've got that going on. But also I think just there is this misunderstanding about self-care, about it being like a nice to have. What I found was that people that burn out do tend to be driven and ambitious. And it's all sorts of ambition. It could be, you know, ambitious and driven to make a difference, to really be there for the people that you love, to, you know, create a brilliant business, whatever it might be. Those people, therefore, the drive in them doesn't give a flying monkeys about whether you're happy or feeling good. It's totally focused on making that difference, achieving that goal, creating that life, whatever it is. And so I knew that talking about self-care wasn't really going to work. Like, I know for myself, that drive in me is not on board with self-care. It doesn't see the point. And so I kind of have to have my ego on board for it, for me to really do something. As soon as I started looking into managing your energy, Olympic athlete style, then I was like, hold on. Ego is interested. My inner drive is suddenly, okay, now I'm going to listen. So hold on a second. You're saying that if I do this stuff, then I can be as effective and productive and powerful as an Olympic athlete? I'm in. So that's why, you know, looking at managing your energy, yes, these are the ingredients that will help you to thrive and feel good, but they're also the ingredients that will help you to be at your most productive and do your best work and perform at your best. Because, you know, if you think of like Serena Williams, can't turn up, I keep using this example, Serena Williams turning up to a tennis match feeling a bit, oh, I don't know, feeling a bit lethargic today. That cannot happen. She knows how to manage her energy. So she turns up feeling on form. Mm. And if she knows it, then we can know it too. So I'm not suggesting we're all going out there suddenly being like Olympic athletes, but it's just, I often find that sports psychology is the place to go for the most cutting edge information and knowledge about how to be, you know, be at our best, basically. Mm. So that's, so looking at that, so then I was just like, right now, rather than talking about self-care, trying to sell people in on that, let's talk about manage your energy because you're exhausted. And this is the whole point of this book. There's so much out there on burnout, so many studies, and there are brilliant books on it. But I wanted to create a book that would meet you where you're at when you are just exhausted. Like, don't tell me research about burnout. Don't tell me the sort of, you know, the systemic reasons and the societal and cultural reasons. Like, you don't want to be giving a burnout person more information than they need right now. So if you're super burnt out, I say head to my burnout SOS page and do not come back here and continue this book until you're feeling a little bit more able to cope with the world. Because the last thing you need is to be learning anything more. So yeah. When you are feeling like, okay, I think I can handle figuring out what to have for dinner without freaking out, because that's how I get when I'm burnt out. I remember standing at a supermarket and being like, I don't know which packet of crisps to choose. Oh God, I think I'm burnt out. So then come back and learn about managing your energy. And, you know, that's how we can then start to, for you to reclaim your energy on the physical, mental and emotional level. And to continue that. And so having written that, having now understanding what it takes to manage my own energy, I'm getting deeper and deeper into it. Now I'm about honoring my energy. So over the past few days, I've really been just designing my day so that I'm doing things that will top my energy back up, refresh my energy, and checking in with myself regularly and going, what do I need right now? Do I need an energy boost or do I need to calm myself down? Mm. Have I got too hyper or do I need that? So rather than saying, what can I do to care for myself today? Which can be a confusing thing to ask me because that's where the resistance can come up. It's like, cut to, what do I need? What do I need energy-wise? Mm. That I can answer far better than what can I do to care for myself? So I'm really, really excited to share that with people and have them start using those tools because they honestly have been life-changing for me, and I got to see it be life-changing for you as you are my number one guinea pig as I wrote the book.
Mm, yeah, honestly, God, it was really in my goodbye hello this year, last year, wasn't it? Filling 2020 out. I'm so grateful that I got my own personal burnout coach when I was really, really needing it this time last year.
It was very handy for me that you did need that.
It was really handy for me too. I just want to pick up on something you said before about meeting someone where they are. And I love that you start with the burnout SOS, you know, really speaking to someone who is really in that place of burnout. And you said, you know, this is not the time to be making big life decisions and planning your future. And I just really, really giggled at that bit because that was so me last January. I remember thinking, oh, okay, really need to look at this. What am I going to do? Journaling a lot, trying to actually solve this problem.
Yes.
And when you had told me that, when you'd given that message to me and said, you know what, your priority right now before we have our first session is to focus on your recovery and doing things that nourish you and things that lift your spirits. And it was like, oh, is that permission slip that I don't have to figure this out now? And actually, this is the worst time to figure stuff out because, as you say, your IQ drops. You're not in your body then. You're not using your most resourceful and creative parts of your brain.
You're not inspired when you're burnt out.
Yeah. So I loved that you started there and you really spoke to people in that place of burnout because, as you say, I think that's exactly what someone needs when they're just feeling so overwhelmed and so exhausted.
Yeah. Just coming back to what you were saying about, you know, why do people resist it? A large part of that also comes from the shitty committee that has got you into this state in the first place and that got you into overdrive and into your, you know, burnout archetypes. And so at first, if you know, you speak to a burnout person and you're like, right, let's look at your self-care, that voice in their head is just like, we can do that when you go on holiday, which often people will wait to go on holiday to do any of the nice self-care. Look, we've got a holiday booked in 2 months' time. We can do that then. Right now, you've got a lot more urgent stuff on your list than having a bubble bath. And although, by the way, having a bubble bath is very powerful tool. All this thing of like, self-care is more than just a bubble bath. I'm like, yes, but it's actually very effective because you release oxytocin when you get into hot water.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Deeply relax. So yeah. But yeah, so that's why, you know, people will resist it because that voice in your head will be like, you do not have time for this. But eventually that's why I see burnout as actually being, for so many people, and this is what I saw in my father, he had a massive burnout, but it was the beginning of a whole new amazing chapter in his life where it changed his life for the better. I used to talk about my father before the burnout, my father after the burnout, he became a different person, but he also uncovered a dream that he had suppressed of sailing around the world, and about probably 20 years after his burnout, he fulfilled that dream. He even sailed to the Antarctic with my brother. Like he changed his life. And that came from his whole body, his whole system, bringing him to his knees and going, stop, listen. Our bodies are so wise. And I say in the book, if we were to learn, if we were to just listen to our bodies and the wisdom from our bodies, then we would be energized and calm and grounded, but that takes a lot of time and a lot of practice. And so in the meantime, here are some tools you can use while you're trying to, you know, tune into your body.
Did anything surprise you in writing this book?
Oh my God. Well, it's got to be the exercise. I don't know if it surprised me or horrified me at the time, but as I started really researching what it takes to build resilience, what it takes to keep yourself really energized, what helps to calm you, what do people who are really happy and fulfilled and successful, you know, that don't and don't burn out in the process, like what are their habits? And time again, the same two effing things, exercise and meditation, which I do not do. I did not do. And we've done a whole podcast on, you know, looking at exercise in a whole new way and how it's changed both our lives. And we've spoken for years about our resistance to exercise.
Yeah.
And so it was discovering that exercise, and it can come in all shapes and sizes, like vigorous housework, hiking up a
mountain, doing a HIIT workout at home, yoga, whatever, you know, whatever it might be, jumping up and down on a trampoline. There are so many benefits to it, and it actually helps fill up your energy on all levels. So, you know, you can do exercise which fills you up on your physical level, mental level, emotional level, and spiritual level. So it's like a real superpower. And I used to think of exercise as something that was like a hobby. Like some people do exercise, some people do play the piano, some people weave baskets. Like, you know, what's your hobby? I didn't realize that exercise is so essential for human beings. And, you know, you can even exercise being movement. So often we end the day feeling worn out and fatigued. It's actually because we haven't moved our bodies enough. And if we do 20 minutes of exercise, you will, lo and behold, you will have this whole new boost of energy, so you can come home and not just flop on the sofa exhausted, but you can come home, do some exercise, and suddenly be way more present, have way more energy to give to yourself, if you live with other people, to give to them, to give your loved ones, to give to your friends, energy to do hobbies that you enjoy, that actually when you're exhausted and you flop on the sofa, you know there are things you want to do, but actually I'm a bit tired and I might just watch some Netflix. Mm-hmm. But if you move, you can recharge your batteries. So that was for me the most surprising thing. And that's why in the book, when I talk about it, I talk about my resistance to exercise and which is why I couldn't be more sorry to be telling you what I'm telling you now. Exercise is key.
I loved that, how you broke it to everybody in the book. I'm so sorry to tell people.
Because I used to get so frustrated when people, you know, my partner and my mum would say to me, it's not right for you to be tired all of the time. And I'd get so irritated. What does she know? Like, and she'd say, what you need to do is exercise. And I was like, I'm already tired. And now you want me to use even more energy. What I didn't realize was that exercise gives you energy. And that stuff blew my mind, how things you do, some can drain your energy, and some of them are good things that you do that drain your energy, but some things that you do give you energy. And I thought you woke up in the morning with a set amount of energy and throughout the day, you're using it up. I had no notion that throughout the day you could be topping up that energy. So at the end of the day, you can feel still energized.
And that's radical. I feel like I've really, in the last 12 months, I've realized energy is everything.
It's everything. When you're feeling energized, you feel well in your body, and that grounded energy as well.
Mm.
Not, as I said, discussing with the client the other day, not that fizzy energy, like sort of that I used to feel all the time, too much coffee and too much adrenaline and not knowing how to ground myself. But when you feel energized, you get to you get to experience fulfillment and joy, and you can feel inspired. You feel that you have the energy to follow your dreams. You feel good in your body, you know, and your energy is what affects your mood. I'm not saying that you should aim to be happy and, you know, buzzing like 24/7. And so that's why I'm really into honoring your energy. Some days I'm just low on energy and I know why, and it's okay. And actually doing a HIIT workout is not what I need right now. Mm. I need some gentle yoga to be my movement. Mm. But yeah, energy, that's why it's for me, this book is about reclaiming your energy and reclaiming your life, because the way to reclaim your life when you're burnt out is to learn how to reclaim your energy. And which is why it's like, really step by step, this is going to take a little while, but the moment you start doing one thing, it will make a difference.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, it really will. I'm proof. So what would you say to somebody who's listening to this episode and feeling frazzled, feeling burnt out, feeling really overwhelmed?
I would say that often when you're in that place, it can feel like you're trapped in it and feeling powerless and feeling helpless and feeling that it's all hopeless are all really common themes, common feelings that come with being burnt out. But actually what I have found is that the more I spoke to people who had broken free from burnout and recovered from burnout and were now feeling more energized and more grounded and calmer than they ever have done before. For some people, yeah, changing career or making a move, you know, in their work did make a difference. But more often than not, it was really small things that made the big difference. So you don't have to learn, you know, I say at the start of the book, all the things you're going to learn in here are things you already know how to do. That you don't have to learn any new techniques. Maybe the odd breathing technique, fun yogic breath technique, which I love, instead of, no, yogic coffee. Oh, yes. But you know how to put your arms up and down and breathe in and out. So actually you do know how to do it. Like none of these things are things you have to learn to do. You know how to do them already. It's really just giving yourself permission to feel better. You deserve to feel better. And I felt so resigned, even after I stopped burning out, just felt resigned to feeling tired a lot of the time. I thought as a working mother, there probably, maybe there wasn't another way, but there is another way. I know it because like you said, I'm living proof of it. You're living proof of it. And it really does, small changes step by step are what will make the big difference.
Mm. Oh, I love that. Yes, so it's just about giving yourself permission and taking that one small step forward.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, so gorgeous. Oh, I can't wait for people to get their hands on the book.
I know, me too.
So it's out on the 15th of April.
15th of April, the audiobook and the paperback. So if you're listening to this fresh off the press and it's before that date, then and you're keen to get the book, then please, please pre-order it. It makes a huge difference when people pre-order a book. It really helps it get up there in the charts and in front of other people's eyes. And when you do that, you can come, if you show me your receipt, you will get a ticket to my event on the 22nd of April, Time to Thrive, where I really show you how to take the book and really use it to bring about change over the next 30 days. And you can also go into a prize draw to win a chance of winning a coaching session with me. And due, of course, to lockdown and not being able to do an in-person launch party, I'm doing an online launch party with Emma Gannon interviewing me. So the more, the merrier. I would love everyone to come. And if you'd like to come to that, then, we'll put the link in the show notes. And you can go to the burntoutbook.com to find out all about the book and where to pre-order it or order it. And yay.
Thank you. Thank you for being the guest in the guest hot seat on the Project Love podcast.
Thank you, Vicky. This has been this has made me so excited talking about it with you.
Yay.
And thank you for being such an important part in me creating this book, being my guinea pig, but my supporter, my cheerleader, reading through stuff, bouncing ideas off of you. You get a big acknowledgement at the back of the book.
I very much enjoyed that.
One of the biggest, actually. And yeah, this has really made my day.
Oh, me too.
You've been listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device.
And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever. Thank you.